This is Ozarks at Large. We know walking is better for us than sitting. Most of us, given the options, would choose a stroll over an hour in congested traffic. The book Walkable City, How Downtown Can Save America One Step at a Time, lays out so many other advantages a city can have that encourages walking. Advantages such as economic, health, and mindful advantages. The book's author, Jeff Speck, is a city planner and urban designer. He'll be at the Fayetteville Town Center Wednesday night at 6 for the second of four talks about mobility, sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission. Jeff Speck joins us now on the phone. Jeff, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Kyle, thanks for having me. Do you actually have an hour of congestion in Northwest Arkansas? I heard you had a rush minute there, not a rush hour.
It's all relative, Jeff. If the people who move here from Atlanta or Dallas will laugh at us, those of us who've been here a while, yeah, okay. So we tend, what we have are single arteries to get from city to city. It's interesting because some of the things in Walkable City, I think, we all know, at least subconsciously. And then some examples seem counterintuitive, but when you dig deeper, makes sense. I'm thinking of the Atlanta Olympics. Here you have this congested city, and you have hundreds, or at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of new people arriving for this two-week global event. Pollution drops, people suffering from asthma drops, and it's because more people are walking.
Yeah, people don't realize, or I think people have started to realize, and certainly the latest data makes it very clear that American pollution doesn't come from factories anymore; it comes from tailpipes. And the latest studies showed that at least in the U.S., it is the transportation sector and principally individuals commuting that's placing the greatest burden on our air quality. So that's another health factor to keep in mind, and of course it's a climate change factor as well. Most of us contribute to climate change principally through our drive. So anything you can do to take away that requirement is really powerful. You know, everyone's been replacing their light bulbs in their houses with these energy saver light bulbs, which we should all do. But that saves you as much energy in a year as moving to a walkable place saves in a week. So, we can make all these points about how the walkable lifestyle is healthier and more sustainable and actually economically more powerful than an auto-dependent lifestyle, and my book makes those points, but I like to move on beyond that and talk about how even the places that we live that have been developed according to this car-centric model can be modified in ways, you know, quickly and cheaply that make our lives a lot better. And that's been the focus of my work. You're not to come to a place where most people drive and tell you that you shouldn't do it.
Well, you have 10 stops of walkability and how to get there. And it, you know, some of them are better parking, put the car in its space. And one that I like is make walking more interesting.
Yeah, the problem is that in America, where most people do own cars and the car is sitting there in the driveway between them and everything, how do you get people to make the choice to walk? Or how do you create at least parts of cities, you know, and certainly downtowns like you find in Fayetteville and Springdale and Rogers and Bentonville? You know, how do you make parts of cities walkable so that people have the option to have that lifestyle, even in a region which is principally a driving region? And in order to get people to make that choice to walk based on their environment, I like to say, it's my general theory of walkability, I like to say the walk has to be four things. It has to be useful, safe, comfortable, and interesting. And each one of those is, you know, a topic that we could discuss forever. But the interesting walk just points out that if you're walking down a street and all of a sudden there's like a surface parking lot or a parking deck, you know, there's just a blank wall or the fronts of the cars up against the street or something similar, you're pretty much likely not to take that walk again. So it isn't enough just to make the streets safer, which is the focus of our work. The streets also need to be useful, which means mixing different uses close by each other, which we used to do, of course, all the time, and we don't do much anymore, and it's become illegal in many places to have mixed uses. And then to make the streets comfortable and interesting, which basically means lined by buildings with friendly faces. And those efforts take a bit longer than just fixing a street, but you really need to do all those things if you're going to create a sector of your city in which people are making the choice to have a more walk-based lifestyle.
You write that the biggest danger to a pedestrian, not crime, but it's the very real danger of automobiles moving quickly. How do you change that?
Well, what's really interesting is that most people's commutes, let's say you've got a 20-minute commute, a very small percentage of that commute is through downtown streets where people are likely to want to enjoy that walkable lifestyle. And actually, if you change the speed limit, whether real, perceived, or you know, just how fast people are driving, in a downtown area, from, say, 35 or 40, which is often typical, to 20 or 25, you actually lengthen people's commutes by about 10 seconds, right? And what often happens, in many places, people are just speeding from red light to red light. So the question is, how can you just get people to drive the marked speed limit, or how can you lower the speed limit just a little bit more, but have people actually follow it? And that has to do with all the cues that exist in the street space that actually, as a driver, make you feel comfortable going faster or a little less comfortable going faster. And there's about 20 of them, and I talk about them, and I'll discuss them in my lecture. The bigger the blocks, the faster people go. The wider the lanes, clearly, the faster people go. Many cities have a 12-foot lane width standard for all the new streets that they stripe. That's a 70-mile-an-hour standard. It's a highway standard. We used to have 10-foot lanes, and we're going back to 10-foot lanes. Is there parallel parking, which you know, is a barrier of steel that protects the curb from moving vehicles but also makes you drive more slowly, perhaps because you hope to get a parking space, right? Mm-hmm. Are there street trees? One study, you know, the engineers used to refer to street trees as FHOs, fixed and hazardous objects. And they would tell you not to put them next to streets because they make driving more dangerous, which makes sense, I suppose. You might hit a tree. Until someone did a study in Orlando and found out that actually there are fewer accidents, fewer injuries in the stretches of a street that had street trees than the stretches that didn't, because actually the streets are one more thing that causes drivers to proceed with care. So it's not about slowing down people's commutes. It's just about kind of stopping the speeding and having cars going a more reasonable speed in those small areas where you hope to have a walkable district. And there's 100 ways to do it, and we've been doing them in many cities. I was talking to my host just an hour ago, starting to prepare my lecture, and I was reminded how close you are to Tulsa. I just did a plan for downtown Tulsa where actually my team and I redesigned the entire downtown core. 30 miles of streets exist within their 1 square mile downtown, and we've redrawn, you know, in terms of this design, because we just did it. It hasn't been implemented yet, except on a couple streets. But we've redrawn every single foot of streets downtown, and as the city moves forward and restripes their streets, they're going to be doing it to our standard.
These sorts of maneuvers, these changes that you're talking about, sound less expensive and easier to implement than, say, building a new road.
Well, you know, the question is, why build a new road? In the first place, we've seen, you know, this concept of induced demand, that traffic tends to follow where the lanes are. And there are reasons to build new roads for access. We've found in study after study, or I should just say example after example, that if you build a new road to fight congestion, or you widen a road to fight congestion, you will quickly get the same amount of congestion in more lanes. So that's not the solution. But the real kind of choice that I like to discuss is whether you rebuild a street or you restripe a street. And many cities, you know, trying to achieve that gold standard of walkability, will spend $2 or $3 or $4 million rebuilding one main street and putting in new curbs and new trees and new everything else, when actually that's enough money to restripe, you know, just with paint, a whole sector of a city. So I'm often directing people to not rebuild, but just to restripe.
These make these suggestions make sense, but they also seem to challenge a lot of people in their ways of thinking. Often when a city, especially perhaps one in the Sun Belt that has grown up around a car culture, decides to make some of these changes, just changing the parking or something, there can be hue and outcry. I mean, it can be sometimes a tough sell for the public.
Well, you never want to mess with people's parking. That's the
right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny whenever I give a lecture, there's usually a dinner afterwards for the people who funded the lecture, right? And there's 10 to 20 of us around a table, and after an hour or so, I stand up and I say, "All right, now we have to talk about something besides parking," because that's all people want to talk about. Clearly, you know, parking. I like to say cars moving slowly are the lifeblood of the American city. I have nothing against cars, and so is parking. Now, that may change with more Uber, more Lyft, with autonomous vehicles when they come around, and there's less auto ownership, which is a trend that everyone is predicting. But you can't try to improve any downtown or would-be walkable area without being ruthlessly realistic about the demands of parking and understanding that retailers often need to offer the teaser parking near their stores. But, you know, a lot of your towns have a ton of parking. They're just, you don't have a, there's a slide I like to show. It says you don't have a parking problem, you have a walking problem. Because people aren't willing to park one block away from the destination because the walk is so miserable, right? So it's kind of a trade-off. In an ideal walkable environment, the parking is not directly in front of the destination, but getting from the car to the shop is a pleasure.
It seems like cities are going to have to address these issues for so many reasons. This is, one thinks, a very important issue for cities moving into the rest of this century.
Well, the issue is that people are using quality of life now to determine where they live. 64% of millennials, which are the young engines of entrepreneurship that cities want to attract, 64% of them decide first where they want to live, and then they move there, and only then do they look for a job. And 77% of them say they plan to live in America's downtown cores. You know, big city, small city, doesn't matter, but they were raised on, you know, Friends and Sex in the City and How I Met Your Mother, and they want to have a urban lifestyle. And they want to live in those parts of their region that can afford them the urban lifestyle. Most cities now are realizing that the strongest economic development strategy is not, you know, to have some sort of aerospace cluster or sci-tech cluster or something else, but to actually become a place where people want to be, and then talent and intellect will move to it and create jobs as a result of being there. So that's why I actually work in a lot of conservative cities. I work in a lot of red cities and red states because the business leaders want to remain competitive.
Jeff Speck is a city planner and urban designer, the author of Walkable City, How Downtown Can Save America One Step at a Time. He'll speak at the Fayetteville Town Center Wednesday night at 6 as part of the speaker series on mobility sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission. Jeff, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks for the great question.